So we're learning about the Malachas of Sidur de Pas. We spoke about the fact that we begin with Malachas Harisha to prepare the ground for seeding. Then we go on to Malachas Zorea. Ultimately, we get to the level of Katsira. And after the Katsira, we have to crush the grains and create a flour. And that flour will eventually bake, after we add water, into a bread. However, to take the wheat and make it into flour, that requires a whole process. We spoke about Malachas Tochen, and then after Tochen, we've crushed and grinded, ground down the wheat, but we still have what we call psoles. And in order to remove the psoles, the chaff and the pebbles perhaps, klipos, different kinds of elements that will not be beneficial to creating lisho, which is the next process when we create the flour and then we add the water, we have to remove all these, shall we call them, impurities that have to be removed. And that leads us to three malachas which are called Zore, Borer, Umarakid. Zore requires that we take the grains and place them in some sort of a utensil. We throw them up and the wind carries away the chaff. Then we have Borer because there's still little pebbles mixed in to the wheat. We got to get rid of those. And then we have something called Merakid, where we use a sifter, a napa, and we place the flour into the napa. The good part of the flour, the refined part of the flour, which we call soles, goes down to the bottom. And the shmarim and different types of klipos, they remain on top. That's called Merakid. The Gemara, at the beginning of Klal Gadol, I mean, when I say Klal Gadol, I mean the Malachas of Klal Gadol, Ayin Gimel, and the Gemara on Ayin Gimel and Beis, is quite, the Gemara is perplexed as to why Zoreh, Borer, Umarakid are three different Malachas in the counting of the 39. Essentially, they're all one, which means to separate the Psolus from the Ochel, which is Borer, so you could have called all three Borer. And the Gemara says, nevertheless, in the Mishkan, they did these three actions or activities as part of a process, and therefore they deserve to be counted in the minion of Lamed Tes as separate Ovos. Which really means that we have to figure out what's the difference between them. And we mentioned before that Zora requires the help of the wind, and Meraki requires a certain activity in which you shake up the flour until finally the refined flour falls through the cracks, through the openings, the sieve. And Borer would mean that either with your hand or perhaps with a kli, you remove the psoles. And although essentially all these three malachas are the same, but they're different pu'ulos, each one has its own tzura. The Gemara goes on to say that even a poor person, when he prepared his bread, he would go through the motions of these three malachos. However, the Gemara talks about a different malach, which is called ketisha, which is a machteshes, and that was grinding. That's what the ashirim, the rich people, used to do in order to make it into soles, nikia, legamre. It was the finest flour. The aniyim, the Gemara says, didn't necessarily use this machteshes and subject the flour to that process of ketisha, and therefore it's not listed in the Mishnah. Rashi then goes on and say that ketisha is nevertheless an av malacha, but it belongs to a different malacha. The question is exactly what malacha, but Rashi says it belongs to malachas dash, which again we have to take up as a separate topic, Bli Neder. And I'm excited to have come across a sefer. I don't know if, gentlemen, you would know, but I'm a big fan of a sefer called Hemiyin Achamuni, which I very often use on a Sunday or a Tuesday morning for my Chumash class. But little did I know until very recently that Hamer Yenachamuni has a volume on Masechet Shabbos, and he goes through the Malachas of Sidur de Pas. So I took it upon myself, Bli Neder, because when you say learning, you know, it's a Neder Gadol, that I would like to go through his presentations to the 11 Malachas that form Sidur de Pas. They're not 11 essays. For example, on Zohar Bora Merakit, he combines them all into one essay. And he has a fascinating discussion with which I presented here to the Kollel yesterday, that the Leital is of the opinion that even though the shear of all malachas of Ochel Nef, of Sidur de Pas is a grogeres, but the Leital insists that if you do Zorah on a third of a grogeres, and you do Borer on another third of a grogeres, and you do Merakin on a third of grogeres, you're chayev, because mitztarfen l'shear. And I had a long discussion yesterday with the Kollel about the fact that these three malachas are all borer in different forms to get rid of the psolas. And therefore you can combine these three to one shir and one grogeres. Of course, the Har Tzvi, who was the chief rabbi here in Yerushalayim, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, he was very much opposed to the Igley Tal, because the Igley Tal derived this from a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi talks about being chai for both Ksiva and Mechika, and according to the understanding of the Igley Tal, which the Har Tzvi disagrees with vehemently, the Yerushalmi means to say that you could have erased one letter and written one letter and you'd be chayef, as if you had written two letters or erased two letters. And basically the Igley Tal understood from the Yerushalmi that there's certain kinds of pairs of malachas that belong to zugos, and when you have a zuga or a zug of two malachas, then you could be mitzarif them both to the shir. And he felt, the Igley Tal, that you could apply that same logic not just to Mechika and Ksiva, as the Yerushalmi did explicitly, but you could apply it to Zorah, Borah, Merakit, and they become a zug of a partnership that really makes up one malach, and if you could be mitzarif them to shir. The Har Tzvi says that such a Yerushalmi doesn't exist. And it's fascinating because the Igley Tal, again, don't quote me on this, I'll be in deep trouble with some of my wife's Hasidish cousins, but the Igley Tal actually doesn't quote the Yerushalmi. He quotes the Meiri, who quotes the Yerushalmi. And not only that, but the Igley Tal adds something to the Yerushalmi that the Meiri quotes. So there are two distances between the actual Yerushalmi as we have it, and the Yerushalmi as the Igley Tal had it. But what I would like to discuss with you today is Maleches Zorah. And Bli Neder will get back to Tochein, because I think if we study Maleches Zorah, it might shed a light on Maleches Tochein. You may recall that on Yom Sheni, we had a long discussion about Tochein Acher Tochein, which was a hemshech of what we started already last week. So I'm going to take a little break from the grinding, because the grind is really, it's really tough, this Maleches Tochein. And I want to take a step back, and we go back to Maleches Zorah, which really comes before Tochein. Now Zorah is a very, very unique Malacha. And the Gemara points this out in Masechet Bava Kama Daf Samach, which is the first of the Ma'ar Makomos on your page. The Gemara points out that when we talk about using natural forces, in this case the wind, to help us to achieve a certain goal, so the Maisa HaGavra, the Maisa HaAdam, is a combination of what he did and the input of his energy together with the energy of the wind, then we get into very heavy sugyas in Masechta Bava Kama, which is called Seder Nezikin. Because when we get to Seder Nezikin, again, we have Mamon HaMazik, but we're focused now on Adam HaMazik, which means that the human intervention in terms of an energy force or an action which ultimately led to the damage of somebody's property, which is Adam HaMazik, often entails the aid of the wind. So for example, if Reuven destroys Shimon's haystack by burning it down, you could talk about two different scenarios. You could talk about taking the torch and lighting the, 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 the haystack, and that's a maisa yashir, meaning in a direct action. Or you could talk about Reuven holding on to the fire, the torch, and he puts it in proximity of the haystack, but it's not going to burn the haystack until the wind comes along and blows and carries the fire from place A to place B and eventually destroys Shimon's property. And that's called Koach Acher Ma'uruv Bo. And in Hilchas Nezikin, the Gemara makes the following distinction. The Gemara says it all depends on how primary is the wind. How much does the wind contribute to the ultimate hezek? There's a low kind of contribution and there's a very profound kind of contribution. In the case of a secondary contribution, then we call that koach acher ma'uruv bo, and you be chayev in the zikin. So the classical case is where you put something up on the roof, and a very normal anticipated wind comes along, which is called a ruach mitsuya, normal velocity wind, and it simply gives a little bit of a blow, and that because of that wind force, the object that you placed high up on the roof comes down and does hezek. In that case, you're chayav. And Rabbi Yochanan calls that isho mishum chitzov, which means that any force that you use is called an extension of your own body. He gives the mashal of sending out a chetz, where you're chayav for ritzicha and for adama mazik. In the case of a chetz here too, when you put something in such a way that the wind will just carry it over, that's called your chetz. And that's called adama mazik. But then we have another case. In the case of isha mishum chitzov, the eish is absolutely a mazik. It's got all the power and the energy to burn down someone's haystack. It's not a small flame, it's a major flame. And there, in that case, the wind only functions in the secondary capacity to relocate the eish, to bring the eish, which is a mazik, into itself. You created that mazik, and now bring it from place A to place B so that Yankel Beryl's haystack goes up, Shimon's haystack goes up in smoke. However, we have a second case, which is the subject of the sugya here on Daf Samach, in the sixth Perek, Perek HaKodesh, which is one of my favorite prokim. I learned it when I was in third grade or fourth grade, I don't remember, and I didn't understand it then, but now I think I begin to understand it. And that is called Liba Velipsa HaRuach, which means that you have a low flame that has to be fanned, that has to be blown, in order to make it into a larger flame, and you blew on it, and then it did damage. So the Braisa says the following. If the libui of the person would have been sufficient to fan the flames such that a normal velocity wind will then carry the flame from one location to the other and cause the damage, then you're chayv. But if you need the libui of the ruach in order to fan the flames and make it into a mazik, so now the wind plays a double function. Number one, it makes the eish into a mazik, because you alone were not blowing hard enough, intensely enough. And number two, after creating this mazik, then the wind plays a second function to relocate the mazik. In such a case, you're pot. Because there the wind plays a primary role. It is a shutaf, it's a partner in creating the mazik. So if the, again, let's just review. If the eish is just a conduit, a force to relocate the fire from place A to place B, then you, the person, created the fire. Your libui, your blowing on the flames, was enough to create a fire, and therefore you're chayav. But if you need the libui v'lipsa ruach to create the fire, it means that now your partnership with the wind is primary in creating a mazik, then you're potter. So let me read that to you inside here in the Gemara Bava Kama Daf Samach, and the Gemara says the following. Tana Rabbanan, liba v'lipsa ruach, im yesh v'libuyo kidei labosa chayav. It means that his libui, even without the admixture or the addition of the wind, would have made the fire into a fire. It's already called a shalheves. Shalheves means it's a mazik. Then he's chayav. But im lav, if it's only after the lipsa ruach that this flame becomes a shalheves, then pot. Now we come into Shabbos, Masechta Shabbos. Amai, why should it be potur lehevi? Shouldn't it be analogous to the case of Zoreh, of Meleches Zoreh? What does he do in the case of Meleches Zoreh? He throws it up into the air. Now, if it comes right down again, nothing changed. He did not get rid of the psolus. What's gonna get rid of the psolus ultimately? It's the wind. The wind is playing, the Gemara says, a primary role over here. And that should be similar to the case of Ein Belibuyo Kedela Labosa. So there's a Shituf Pula here of the man who's throwing up the grains into the air and the wind that's carrying the chaff away. The wind is certainly playing a major role over here, and yet afal pichen yechayev. So I just want to mention that we haven't gotten yet to this essay, which I want to learn with you today. But before we get to this essay, we have in the past, and I'm hoping that this will remind you, mentioned a Rashi with regard to Meleches Tzedah. And that's the famous Rashi called Kederech HaTzadim, or HaTzayadim. Now, what does that mean? In the case of Tzedah, I send out my dog to actually capture the animal. So Shisa Sakelev, again, he activates, so to speak, the animal, but the animal does it on its own. It's not a robot. You know, the animal is a force of nature. And yet you're chaya for that. And Rashi adds two words here, Kederech HaTzayodin. The Mishnah Brura, I'll just mention to you if you want to write it down, in Shintes Zayin Sivkot Yud, which we discussed by Arichus Gadol, makes a big deal about this Rashi, because he understands that Meleches Tzedah is the exception to the rule. As a rule, when you use the forces of nature, in this case the animal, the hunting dog, you would be potter for that. And we're going to understand why in just a few minutes. But the exception to that rule is Tzedah. And Rashi says, because that's the way we do Tzedah. The professional hunters use the dog, you know, as the hunting dog, the hunting animal. Now, that's going to help us here in this sugya, although I didn't know about that until I saw this sugya, because it could be, And he's not going to assume this, so I just want to say it as an introduction. It could very well be that what the Gemara is about to do now in Meleches Zoreh, as we'll soon see in the name of Rav Ashi, is the Gemara is about to establish that Zoreh belongs to a very unique category. It's not the rule, but the exception to the rule, because just like Rashi postulates that Seder is the exception to the rule, and you can be chayav for Seder, even though who actually did the grabbing of the animal? It was the dog. Nevertheless, you're chayav for that, and that's called kederech hatseder, derech hatsayodim. It could be that Meleches Zoreh is an exception to the rule rather than the rule. And that's the way you do the malacha. There's no other way of doing Zoreh except if you use the wind. The Gemara's premise in its kasha is that Zoreh is not the exception to the rule, but rather the rule itself. Otherwise, the Gemara makes no sense. Why does the Gemara have a right to say that in Liba v'Lipsa Ruach in the Zikin Yishvi Chayov, because in Meleches Zoreh Yechayov? The answer is Meleches Zoreh itself is an anomaly. Meleches Zoreh itself undermines the basic rules of the game, and that's because of the special, unique Tzuras HaMelacha of Zoreh. And if you'll say to me, where do we have a precedent? The answer is Rashi by Tzedah, with the Mishnah Brura makes such a big deal that the reason why Yechayev and Tzedah when the dog is the one that hunts down the deer is because that's the Derech HaTzayonim. which means that if you have 39 malachas, you have 38 on one side, and you got saved on the other side. Now, what we could have suggested, but I think this Gemara would, would take the rug out of under our feet here, that there's no question for Melech Zorah, because Melech Zorah likewise, by its very definition, sets up a Tzuras HaMelech that is an exception to the rule, and you're chaya for the wind, even though the wind plays such a primary role in achieving your goal. But the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara assumes right now that Melech Zorah is the paradigm rather than the exception. And in order to justify why, on the one hand, you're potter nezikin for lipsa ruach, and at the same time you're chayev in Melech Shabbos of Zorah for the ruach, the Gemara quotes the following answer. Amar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says, just want to read to you inside, just one second. Ki amrinen Zorah v'ruach misayato. Why is it that in Zorah you chaya for this primary role and contribution of the wind? Hani mili l'inyan Shabbos. Okay? But hacha here, l'inyan nezikin is gram v'nezikin pot. So I skipped three words. Okay, let's read it again. You could probably fill in the three words without seeing the Gemara. Hani mili l'inyan Shabbos. Again, whenever we see Shabbos as the unique halacha, and the Melech Shabbos work in their own way, according to their own definitions, what principle are we applying? Melech Machshavos Asra Torah. So, for example, we discussed in a shiur that I gave yesterday, which I don't expect you to know about, but we discussed the case of writing on Shabbos on an ola means a leaf, and you're potter for that because kol shemalachto miskayemes chayev, that in Shabbos is a special requirement of melacha miskayemes, and the Gemara assumes that if you write something on a leaf, or the Gemara talks about writing something on the onion, the skin of the onion, yeah, then it's not going to last very long. And on Shabbos we have a requirement of Meleches Machshavos. So Meleches Machshavos is another way of saying what we call a Din Mesuyim in Shabbos. Sometimes Shabbos will represent the universal halacha. Like, for example, there's a Sefer Trumas that I discussed at great length, that if you write tefillin with your left hand, the tefillin apostle. And the Sefer Truma mentions, quotes the source for that in Melech Shabbos, because the Gemara says in Perek Abona that if you write two osios with your left hand on Shabbos, you're potter. So sometimes it's very tricky when you learn Melech Shabbos. You have to know whether it's potter because of a universal halacha or because of a special halacha in Melech Machshavos. In any event, here the Gemara wants to illustrate that Melech Zorah is just a reflection of a rule that's both universal and specific. It's a din klali and it's a din mesuya. It's a din klali that applies to all what? All Melech Shabbos. But it's also a din mesuya because it only applies to Melech Shabbos, and it would not apply to Nezikin. Which rule would tell me that Reuven is potur when the wind played such a major role in carrying the fire, or in creating the fire? That's called what? Grav in Nezikin potur. And the Gemara assumes that Grav and Ezekin is not an exception to the rule, but rather rule. And therefore, you should be potter in Shabbos if you did a Grav situation. The Gemara answers, no. We have a principle in Shabbos, which makes Shabbos unique, and makes Shabbos the exception to the rule, that Meleches Machshavos Asra Torah, which means basically he pre-calculated the velocity of the wind, when he did the Zorah, he wasn't stupid about it. He didn't just throw up his weed into the air and expect, all of a sudden the chaff is going to blow away. But he expected the wind. I mean, that's why he's a farmer, and I'm not a farmer. But actually, I could really study in meteorology, and then I would know how to do Melech Zorah. So that's called a well-thought-out, deliberately planned melacha. He utilizes the forces of nature, and he calculates exactly how to use those forces for his benefit and achieve his goal. That's called Meleches Machshevas. So Machshevas means that it's well thought out, well planned, and man is part of nature, and he utilizes nature for the benefit of achieving his goals. He's Chayav and Shabbos for that. And Kol HaTorah Kula, that's not enough. The universal halacha would be, man has to be the sole operator. He has to achieve his goal by himself, and that's called Grama Potter. So Grama is going to be Potter. But in Shabbos, Grama is going to be Chayav. And why is that? Because there's a unique halacha, Meleches Machshevas in Shabbos, that he prepared it, and he knew about it. Rabosai, this Gemara looks like a strange anomaly unto itself. It's like a din misuyam unto itself. And why? Because Meleches Machshevas Osre Torah always goes lekula, and tells you that where in Hilchas Kol HaTorah Kula universal law you would be chayav in Shabbos Yepotah. And I'll give you five examples. Number one, Meleches Machshevas will patter you up in the case of Misasek. Again, there is a universal Misasek, but there's also the Meleches Machshevas Misasek, to the extent to which Shmuel says that if you wanted the white, you wanted to harvest the white figs and you ended up with the black ones, you potter on Shabbos. Meleches Machshevas will patter you up in a case of a davar she'eno miskavin, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that in Kol HaTorah Kula, davar she'eno miskavin is chayev, but in Shabbos Yepotah, because since he didn't have kavana, it's not a Meleches Machshevas. Meleches Machshevas will patter you up in a case of shinui, even though that shinui had no impact on the final result, nevertheless Yepotah in Shabbos because of Meleches Machshevas. Meleches Machshevas will patter you up in a case of chatzi shir, even though we passing like Rabbi Yochanan, the Chatzis Shir Asim in Torah, but in Shabbos it's Potter. And there's a Rashi that assumes that if it's not a Maisa Umnus, if you don't do it the way the professionals do it, and we saw this in the Rambam in various contexts, then you're Potter, because that's not called a Meleches Machshevas. So Rashi is famous for saying in Meleches Ma'amer that if you take all these onions and you grab them together, put them in a basket, you're Potter. That's not called Ma'amer unless you bale a hay, because that's not called a Meleches Umnus. All these cases have one thing in common, that Meleches Machshevas says that whereas in universal terms you'd be Chayev, in Shabbos you'd be Potter. Another example, which we probably should add to the list, but again that becomes very complicated, is called a Malacha She'ena Tzricha L'Gufa according to Rav Shimon. As Machlokas Rishonim, why Rav Shimon says if it's Eina Tzricha L'Gufa you're Potter. Tosus says it has to do with the Mishkan, but many other Rishonim say because it's not a Meleches Machshevas. And once again, you will never find a Meleches Machshevas Tzricha L'Gufa anywhere outside Shabbos. It's only in Hilchas Shabbos because of Meleches Machshevas. Here, we have the one single exception, that Meleches Machshevas is not a Kula in Shabbos to pat you up, but Meleches Machshevas is a Chumrah, that in Kol Dinei HaTorah universally you'd be Potter, and here on Shabbos you're going to be Chayav. Meleches Machshevas L'Chumrah. So next time you're walking down the streets of whatever it is, I get so confused. There are like five different names here, and I don't know the boundaries, but we'll just call it Emek Rephaim, because that for sure it is. that's Kuliavolo Pligi. So you're walking down the street of Emek Rephaim, and somebody says to you, buddy, can you tell me where in Shas Meleches Machshevas is a Chumrah? You tell him, Bava Kama Daf Sam. Okay? It's going to probably happen in the next few days. Okay. So that's Bava Kama Daf Sam. The problem is that if you think for one moment that Grama is Potter in Kol HaTorah Kula but Chayav in Shabbos, I have news for you. That's not so. And that's the sugi here in Beitza on Daf Chaf Beit. So we're going to put Bava Kama on the side and we're going to pick up Masechta Beitza. If I can just trouble you to find a place for this without knocking over all the cups that I filled up today. What's in Beitz on Daf Kaf Beitz? This is the sugya of Meleches Kibui. And the sugya presents a machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi in the following scenario. He's got a fire, and he has to put out the fire, but that's a Meleches Kibui. So what does he do? He sets up kelim with water in it, full barrels of water, in such a way that the fire is going to hit the kelim. So he's like creating a barrier between, you know, where the fire would reach and destroy his house or whatever property and the fire. So what does he do? He sets up these barrels of water, and when the fire hits these barrels, the barrels break open and the water extinguishes the fire. Is he allowed to do that on Shabbos? The Gemara says that this is a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakhama. The Chachamim say it's allowed. And Rabbi Shimon says, and Rabbi Yossi, excuse me, says that it's awesome. So the Gemara says, Esve, I have the exact opposite. In the case, very strange case, where somebody wrote the Shem Hashem on his body, I have no clue if anybody can help me out why he would do such a thing, but, you know, I guess everything goes. So he wrote the Shem Hashem on his body, and now he wants to go into a mikvah. Very strange scenario. But in any event, the Gemara always has to take up every single case. Now, there's an Isur D'oraisa of Lo Sasun Kein L'Hashem Elokeichem in blotting out the name of God. I don't know if there's anyone who's learning Daf Yomi, but just a few days ago in Daf Yomi, there were questions about what exactly is the Shem Hashem. You know, you have something called Kinuyim, and then you have Racha V'Chanun. I mean, these are complicated business about what's called Shmua V'Shem. But be that as it may, he wrote the Shem. Let's say he wrote Yudke Vavke L'Kuliyam Lopli. That's the Shem Hashem. There's an Issa to obliterate the Shem. And Rabbi Yossi allows him to go into the mikvah, even though he's going to wipe away the Shem Hashem. And the Chacham say it's awesome. So the Gemara wants to know, this is Ipcha, this is the exact opposite of what we saw in the case of Kibui on Shabbos. In the case of Kibui on Shabbos, the Chachamu were Mekil, and they allowed you to set up the water in such a way that the fire is going to be extinguished, and Rabbi Yossi was Machmir. Here in the case of destroying the Shem Hashem, it works in the exact opposite way. Rabbi Yossi is the Mekil, he allows it. You can go into the mikvah even though you know full well that it's going to obliterate the name of Hashem. And the Chachamim say you're not allowed to do so. And it's prohibited. And the Gemara now makes an attempt at reconciling the two. So if you have the Myra Makomas page that I gave out, then on the flip side, hopefully, if it was successful, you will see a major chunk of this essay that I told you at the outset that I want you to learn with me. And what pages did I give you?
94, 95.
Okay, so just let me backtrack. In order to give you a little bit of a broader picture, so that we'll appreciate the two pages that I gave you, I wanted to present to you the Gemara's final conclusion. The Gemara says the following. The Gemara says that the reason why Rabbi Yossi is mekil, he's lenient in allowing the person with the Shem Shem to go into the mikvah, is shiny hasam. That case is different. The Omar Kra, the Pasuk says in Dvarim Yud Beis, the avadetem es shmam min ha-mokom ahu lo tasun kein la-shem elokeichem. So obliterate idol worship, idolatry, but don't do the same thing to Hashem.
And the pasuk says lo tasu. Says the Gemara, asiyahu di asur grama shari, which means the following: that since, according to Rav Yossi, the case of Shabbos, where he sets up the barrels of water, is called grama, that's going to be asur. And therefore, Rav Yossi takes the stricter view. However, in the case of ibud shem, there the Torah says lo tasun kein, and the pasuk lo tasun comes to exclude and to exempt you in the case of grum. The Gemara is very unhappy about that. The Gemara says, "Ihachi, if that's how you're explaining and justifying Rabbi Yossi, hachenamik siv here too with regard to Shabbos, the Torah says lo tasa kol malacha, asiyahu di asur hagrum ashari." If Rabbi Yossi is darshaning the pasuk by Ibud Hashem and it says lo tasun kein asiyahu di asur v'grama shari, therefore he's allowing this guy to go into the mikveh because that's grama, why then doesn't Rabbi Yossi apply the same rule, the same yardstick to the case of Melech HaShabbos and allow him to set up these barrels of water to extinguish the fire begrama? Because the Torah says lo tasa kol malacha asiyahu di asur, and grum is mutter. So now here we're up to the critical point in the sugya. Does the Gemara accept this premise that in Shabbos lo tasa asiyahu di asur grum ashar? Does the Gemara reject it? That's what I want to study with you. So the Gemara answers, chasam derabbanan. In the case of Rabbi Yossi on Shabbos, it's only an isa derabbanan. To be tov sha'adam bahul alma mono isharis le asa lechabuyah. When a person sees a fire coming, he's bahul. He loses it. He is totally overwhelmed. He's in a state of anxiety. Can anybody help me out here with a word for bahul in English? I don't know.
Confused?
No, not confused. He's like overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed.
He's overwhelmed, meaning he's not working with
judgments. He can't.
Correct.
He's
not.
Fire.
Right?
He wants to put out the fire.
He has to put out the fire because, like the Gemara in Perek Kira says that if Nebuch, you have a dead body and the fire is coming, the Gemara says you're allowed to move the dead body. Now that might not sound like a chiddush to you, but moving a dead body is an issue of muksa, it's a very severe issue. But the Gemara says al meso. You have two choices here: either you're allowed to move the dead body or he's going to go ahead and put out the fire. So the lesser of two evils is let him put out the fire. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I have a little bit of a cold today. I don't know what happened to me. But what I meant to say is the less than two evils allowed to move the mukta and not put out the fire. Adam bol al mamon. We have also a perek later on in Masechta Shabbos called Kol Kisve. And there also the Gemara is going to allow him to carry things out into a karmelis when the fire breaks out, because otherwise if you don't allow him to violate the Isur karmelis, which is the Rabbanan, he'll end up putting out the fire, which is a Meleches Kibui Doraisa. So here also, the Gemara says that the Rabbanan made a gzera. Technically, to set up these barrels with the water in it, even according to Rabbi Yossi, is mutter, just like the case that Rabbi Yossi is matir in Ibud Hashem begrama. So to malacha begrama is mutter. However, the Rabbanan asked it because they were afraid he's going to put out the fire. So set up the barrels and you'll do the malachas kibur begrama. And that's okay. Hello, what? Rabbi Yossi says it's not okay. Why is it not okay? Because we're afraid that eventually what you're going to, you know, you're going to tell him, okay, set up the barrels, but he's going to take the water and he's going to pour it over the fire. So that's a gzera derabbanan. So I come back to my original question. Does the Gemara reject the Havamina or accept the Havamina? The Havamina was that in Shabbos, just like in Ibud Hashem, grama is mutter. Did the Gemara backtrack on that? Absolutely not. The Gemara accepts that premise, even Lamaskana. Grama is mutter, even according to Rabbi Yossi. Kuliyamalo pleading that grama is mutter. Rabbi Yossi has a problem. He says once you start getting involved in using this method, it's going to lead you to this method, Adam Bol Amamona, and he's going to come to violate a Malach and Doraisa of Kibbutz. But on a Doraisa level, the Gemara accepts the premise that grama is mutter. So now let's look at what we have on the table now. universally, grama, ikal tarkula, is not considered maisa adam, and you're potter. Therefore, nezikin, grama nezikin, potter. Therefore, in ibur Hashem, you're allowed to go into the mikvah and be gorem ibur Hashem because grama is mutter. What about Shabbos? Does Shabbos fit into the universal rule or is it the exception? So the answer is that Shabbos fits into the universal rule, and therefore Gram Kibui is mutter because lotase kol malocha asiyahu da also hagram ashari. The Rabbanan get nervous about it, but on the Doraisa level it's mutter. How do we reconcile that with the Sugya Baba Kama? The Sugya Baba Kama says that Meleches Zoreh is Chayav on Shabbos because Meleches Makshevis Asur Torah. In the exact parallel case of Nezikin, you're Potter because Groman Nezikin is Potter. But Shiny Shabbos, the Gemara says, and you're Chayav Meleches Zoreh because Meleches Makshevis Asur Torah. Which means that you in a deliberate, premeditated way, you set it up utilizing the benefits of the natural forces of the universe so that you will achieve your goal, in this case separating the psolis from the chitim, from the shiboles. And the same thing is true in kibbutz. You were well calculated, well thought out and deliberate by setting up these barrels in such a way that the water is going to extinguish the fire. No, the Gemara says, Kuliyavolo Pligi, even Rabbi Yossi agrees that midoraisa, this is mutter, because lotase asiyahu diyos agrama shari. Now if I apply that principle to the case of Zore, he should be mutter. So in Zore, the Gemara says in Baba Kamadav Samach, that because of Melechus Machshemes, we're not going to apply the principle of grama. And Shabbos becomes the exceptional rule of Chumra. And the Gemara here is assuming as far as Gram Kibui is concerned, that Shabbos fits into the universal Allah, the Gram is Potter, it's derived from a Pasuk. And we don't apply the principle of Meleches Machshevis Osrit Torah. So that leads to the page that I gave you, which... what did we say is 94?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I just want to take a minute to see if I left anything out so we're ready for this. I think pretty much we covered it all. Okay. So in order to explain this, he has a rush. Okay? And this you'll see in a paragraph that says Yesha Rotzu Litaritz. You have this? He doesn't tell you who he's quoting, but whoever it is building himself standing on the shoulders of the Rosh. Now, he says the following. Malacha Zu, I'm skipping to the next to the last line, he's referring to Malacha Zoreh, Ikar Asiyosa Al Yidei HaRuach, I will be Alma Grama Pot. What does he mean when he says Ikar Asiyosa Al Yidei HaRuach, Rabbosai? Does that remind you of anything that we said in the last 15 minutes?
Zoreh.
Well, he's talking about Zoreh. But what does it remind you of? Seder. Do you remember I mentioned to you that there's a Rashi in Seder that says that that's called Derech HaTzayod? And it means that even though Grama is Potter, even in Shabbos, Seder is the exception to the rule, says Rashi, because that's the Derech HaTzayod. The Rush is using the same logic, or shall I say the same mechanism, or structure, whatever word you want to use, to Melech HaZoreh. And he's saying, Ikar Asiyos Al Yidei HaRuach. That's the way you do this, Melech. You accomplish your goal with the help of the Ruach. Just like in Seder, again, I'm adding that, you accomplish your goal with the help of the hunting dog, and Yechayef is what you'd say. So too, in the case of Zoreh, you accomplish your goal through the help of the Ruach, and therefore Yechayef. So then in this paragraph, Klomar, he fleshes it out, And he says, what do we understand from this Rosh? That Mechaveh, Melechas Kibui, should be analyzed from the universal perspective of Grama Potter, that Grama is not considered your action. However, Zora, because of its very nature, is a gramadika malacha, that's the darka shel malacha. That's when the Torah says Yechayah for Zora, the original Zora, which as it was done in the Mishkan, was with the help and the aid of the Ruach. So that's called the Asiyas HaMalacha. Mechaveh is a general, an application of a general universal rule that grama is potur, and therefore if you do kibui ayidei grama on a deraisa level according to Rabbi Yossi, you're potur mutur, I should say, and therefore you're not taking water and pouring it over the fire, you're just setting it up as a barrier in the way of, in the path of the fire, such that when the fire hits that barrier and the water explodes, that's when it has a kibui. So that's not kibui, that's grama in kibui. So Rabbo says, a pella to me that the Chazon Ish says that based on the Rashi of Derech HaTzayodim in Seder, the Chazon Ish writes that any malach that you do with a machine, you're chayev for. So, for example, you can thresh with a machine. If you go online, you can get a whole list of, you know, they sell all sorts of heavy machinery for farmers. There are bulldozers and that would flatten. Oh, I forgot what it's called. There's a technical name for it that flattens the ground, which is meleches choresh.
It's
like what's
choresh,
it called?
Like choresh of an animal.
Correct. And therefore he says that if you use an animal for a malacha, it doesn't matter which malacha, if you use an automated machine, today we have robots, right? There are surgeons, I think, tell me if I'm right, Dr. Joel or Dr. Mitch, that, I don't know, an eye surgery, basically, I don't think, you can't do long distance eye surgery, can you? Well, they have that too already?
Coming close.
They're coming close. But other kinds of surgery you can do from halfway across the earth, you know, just by telling the robot what to do. And the Chazon Ish says that Yechayev Melechas Shabbos for that. Now, I have my doubts about it. Again, I'm not here to doubt the Chazon Ish. You know, I'm not even a mosquito on the back of an elephant here. But what I'm suggesting is that you can't build anything on this Rashi. Rashi is talking about Melechas Tzeda. Rashi is not talking about Melechas Choresh and Zoreah and all the rest on the list. You know, I'm going to do a Zriya with a machine, and I'm going to be chayav. I don't know if Rashi holds that way. Is that the normal way of Zriya? And now, what we're adding here to the list of meleches Seda is Zoreh, because the Rashi is telling you that kach darka shel Zoreh. Zoreh is done with the help of the wind. But don't draw universal conclusions. Adarabba, the universal conclusion of Melechas Shabbos is kibui. Kibui is your answer. Kibui is your paradigm. And there, the universal p'tur of grama applies. Again, notwithstanding all the rabbanans that were involved in. As we said before, you can set up gram kibui and you might violate an Issa d'rabbanan, but on a deraisa level. So now, how do we take this chiddush of the Rosh and plug it back into the Gemara in Bava Kama? The Gemara in Bava Kama quotes the principle of Meleches Machsheves Asur Torah. And he says the following, that with regard to Meleches Kibui, we're going to say Meleches Machsheves Asur Torah, Ein HaKavana Lichlol Es Kol Meleches Shabbos Shein Shonos El Specifis Meleches Zoreh. Ah, so the Meleches Machsheves Asur Torah is specific to Zoreh. I mean, we use the Rashi and we wanted to apply it to Meleches Tzeda as well. And he says that Zoreh is the Yotzeis Min HaKlal, so I want you to emphasize those words, because that's the key to understand this Rosh. And that L'chatchila, when you go and you define the essence of Meleches Zoreh, your answer is that you throw it up into the air and it's done through the aid of the air, that's called grama, but that's the tzuras hamalach, and that's what you're chayav for. And that's called Meleches Machsheves Asrei Torah. Yeah, again, it's very difficult to put this into the Gemara because Meleches Machsheves Asrei Torah is not a principle that's unique or limited to Meleches Zoreh. Meleches Machsheves Asrei Torah is the definition of Melacha. So I don't know. He doesn't address this question how to reconcile the Rosh with the Gemara, fit it into the language of Gemara. I would just take a stab at it. I'm not telling you I'm happy about this, but maybe we could say Meleches Machsheves means that we can look at the Mishkan and we can ask ourselves the question: well, okay, they did Zorah in the Mishkan, but they did a lot of things in the Mishkan. Well, everything they did in the Mishkan is a Melacha. So the Gemara at the beginning of Bava Kamma says that it's got to have a certain chashivas to it. Right? So I'm just suggesting that maybe Meleches Machsheves Asrei Torah is going to tell you and justify why we're going to derive Meleches Zoreh from the Mishkan. And the answer to that is because you thought it out, you set it up, there was a deliberate preparation, right? A preparation. And you engineered it and orchestrated it in such a way that the wind is going to come and is going to blow away the chaff. That's called the Machsheves. And now we can go back to the Mishkan and we can say that don't think that Melechet, in other words, Meleches Machsheves is a magical kind of principle and it could serve to fill in a missing piece in the puzzle. And what that piece in the puzzle is, that's something which universally would not constitute your Maisa, because it's Grama, not your Maisa, can be upgraded to the status of a Malacha and you're chayav for it as if you did the Maisa. Through what mechanism, through what principle? Meleches Machsheves Asrei Torah.
You can argue that it's part of the Malacha per se.
Right.
It's not a separate entity of Grama, but it's part of the wind is part of the Malacha per se.
Right. Excellent. But again, I would have said, if I didn't have this rush, that Meleches Machsheves Asrei Torah is a principle that should apply straight across the board to all 39 Malachas. The rush is saying, no. The Gemara is exercising this principle, is flexing the muscle of Meleches Machsheves Asrei Torah only with regard to Meleches Zoreh. Mechabe, on the other hand, becomes a representative of the klal, of the general rule that applies to all melechos, and therefore if you do it through an indirect method of kibui, of grama, you're going to be potter. So it's very interesting that Meleches Machsheves Asrei Torah, even in this context of grama, works in two different directions, lekula and lechumra. So when you do something through grama, the Torah says, lo taseh, but then the same Meleches Machsheves is going to tell me, but if you in the case of Zoreh, if you plan and you engineer it in such a way that the wind is going to carry away the chaff, you organized it, that's considered Meleches Zoreh.
You might be able to rationalize it that the main purpose is to accomplish the Melacha.
Correct.
If this is the standard way of doing, you've accomplished it regardless of how much energy you put in or how many you shoot.
Correct, and how much energy the wind puts in, right? So that's the way you accomplish your goal, and that's well orchestrated, deliberate, it was well thought out, well planned, and you're going to be chai for that in Meleches Zoreh. However, Rashi doesn't learn this pshat. And Rashi's not going to help us, meaning you're not going to be able to enjoy the benefit of the Rosh's Chiddush here, that it's a separate din in Meleches Zoreh, and that's the nature of Meleches Zoreh, if you hold like Rashi. Because Rashi says that there's a fundamental principle of Meleches Machsheves that distinguishes Shabbos from Nezikin. Rashi is talking about Shabbos and not about Meleches Zoreh. So let me get back to the Rashi and read that to you. Rashi says the following. Meleches Machsheves Niskaimo Machshavto Denichole Beruach HaMesayat. Which sounds like, again, unless you're going to push this in to Zoreh, he's talking about all Malachas. Rashi doesn't single out Zoreh. There's not even a clue or a hint here that Rashi's telling you something about Zoreh. Rashi is saying that what is Taich Veleches Machshavas Asur Torah? This Kaima Machshavta. And that's the nature and the essence of Shabbos. Veleches Shabbos means this Kaima Machshavta.
Machshavta would mean purpose, right?
Correct. His purpose, his goal, his, you know, his achievement. And this was all the Nichole, Rashi says. Nichole, Beruach HaMesayata. It doesn't sound like Rashi is setting up Melechas Zore as the exception to the Ruach.
Oh, he's talking about Ruach, what else is it?
Right, no, he's talking about Melechas Machsheves. Yo, Ruach is an application, but he's explaining what does it mean, Melechas Machsheves? This Kaim Machshavta. And this Kaim Machshavta works in both directions. If it was not this Kaim Machshavta, he's going to be Potter of Melechas Shabbos. If it was this Kaim Machshavta, he'd be Chayev. And Rashi says, Afagav the Ruach Mesayato, but Nicholesha Ruach Mesayato, because that's how he's Mekayim his Machshava.
Is this ever applied to Choresh with an animal, or that's just.
Choresh is going to be the same discussion. That once again, you're going to utilize the animal for helping you out in Melechas Charisha in certain cases. You're not going to do Charisha via Dayan. And you might be Chayav through the act of the Shor because of this Kaim Machshavto. And that would be Melechas Machshavas Osvito. So again, what we're seeing here is that we're going to take, machinery according to the Chazanish, we're going to take the principle of Rashi's Melechas Machshavas Osvito of this Kaim Machshavto, and we're going to apply it straight across the board. The problem is, what do we do with the Sugya of Kibui when the Gemara says, Lotasa is Asiya Osur, but Groma is mut. And we would have said that it's like Rabbi should be asur because of this Kaiba Machshavt. So on the bottom line on the right side, he says, Lachain Hayatzarach Leos Lefi Rashi, Sha'odam Shinia Chavis Malea Mayim, Vitichnein. I mean, that's the key word here. You don't have this?
Yeah.
You didn't get a copy?
I'm just stuck on
sorry.
By putting the chavis, assuming that the way to have them in the world, that it's a deraisa, right?
Yeah.
You're not doing anything when putting out the fire. You're setting it up in advance.
Oh, the fire is on the way, and you set up a chavis malei mayim in the path of the fire.
And then later it's going to happen. It's
correct.
Not like by Zohar that it's one process.
Oh, I see. Oh, good, good, good. That's a good point. There's something called Lialter, and there's something called Liacharzman. Okay, maybe we'll get to that. But the key word here is Vitichnein. What is Vitichnein?
He's setting it up.
He's setting it up. He calculated it. And you know what? He could do this like immediately right before the fire comes. And therefore he says that this Kibui should come under this Kaima Machshavto. The Hayatzarach Lios Chai.
Okay.
So again, let's just summarize. Bishleim, according to the Rush is saying that Zoreh is the exception to the rule. There's no general rule called Niskayim Machshavto. On the contrary, it all depends on whether you did a Maisa Yashir or a Grama. And therefore, we understand very well that setting up the barrels in such a way that that you're causing a Kibui is going to be Muta on a Doraisa lip. But according to Rashi, who says that Melechas Machshavas Asur Torah means that what's your definition of Melacha? Niskaima Machshavto. If that be the case, then in the case of Chavis, where he sets it up in a way that the Chavis is going to break and the water is going to extinguish the fire, that's also called Niskaima Machshavto V'hayitzarech Lios Chai. So in order to answer this question, he quotes an Avne Nezer. Unfortunately for me, he doesn't tell you where the Avne Nezer is. Now normally I could circumvent that problem if he would quote the Avne Nezer verbatim. Even if you give me two words from the Avne Nezer, I plug it into Bar Ilan and I do a word search. But here he doesn't quote the Avne Nezer verbatim. He tells you that there was a minhag in Poland, and the Avnei Nezer was called. It was called to his attention. This is the same author as the Igli Tal. That what they used to do when they divorced a woman, instead of him giving the get into her hands, v'nosad biyada, he used to place the get in his own hand on top of the woman's hand, and then he would open his hands. And the get would fall into her hands. Have you ever seen that? The answer is no, you've never seen it.
I've seen women's hands tied.
Yeah, I didn't see it tied, but what they do is, I saw many gittin when I was doing shivush, And what they do is they tell the woman to open up her hands in this way, and they call in the Edim, and they warn the Baal 50 times over that the Edim should see him laying the get into her open hands before she closes her hands. And this is a whole to-do about it. But apparently back in Poland, they had such a minhag. And again, you're dealing with Arias and Ashes Ish and Mamzeris and all that. And they asked the Avnezer if he could justify this minhag, where basically what the Baal did was he was merapes yadav, you know, he loosened his grip on the get, and the get fell into her hands. And the question really is that called grama or not? And he writes that the Avnezer worked very hard on this issue, and with a tremendous amount of charifus ubikirus bilti mitsuya. He said, you'll never see it. It's amazing. But basically what he's telling you is that the Avnezer, the Sogat Shem, went through all of Shas, you know, in his mind, and in this tshuva, in order to come up with a justification for this thing. So, if you wanted to study the sugya of grama, and again, grama has so many fine details, then you want to read this tshuva of the Avnezer. I can't tell you exactly where the tshuva is. Rich Shem will find it one day. And in the tshuva, the Avnezer raises the question, what's the difference between grama in kibui, where you're potter, and meleches zora, where you're chayav? So the Avnezer, in the paragraph that starts Omer HaAvnezer, says the following. There's a fundamental difference between these malachas. Okay. So by way of introduction, we have to mention a sugya in Perek Bamem Adlikin. The Gemara postulates that every malacha has to have a goal. It has to have a tachlis. It has to have what I call a victim, meaning an object which I'm trying to improve. And the Gemara says that in the case of kibui, let's say, for example, you have a piece of wood that's on fire, and now you want to put out the fire. The malach is not the fire. The malach of kibui is not extinguishing the fire. But rather, it's what's called a pecham, which means what he wants to obtain is the burnt coal. We'll call it coal, or the wood that's burnt. And he wants to reuse it in another campfire. So he's creating a pecham. So therefore the Gemara says that if, let's say, there's a fire, and the chole, the sick person, needs darkness, and the light of the fire is disturbing his high fever, and he goes and he puts out the fire, the Gemara says that's called the Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa, and according to Reb Shimon, he's pot. Or alternatively, let's say he has Shemen in the Nair. Right? Dr. Joel and I spent some time on Shemen in the Nair today about Muktzah. But now we're not talking about Muktzah. He wants to put out the fire on Shabbos so that the fire should not burn up all the Shemen. So he's interested in saving the shemen. The Gemara says that's mutter according to Reb Shimon. Again, everything is derabbanan, but on a deraisa level, it's a malacha shein etzricha legufa. However, if he wants to have the etzim as pecham for another fire, then he's chayav. Says the Avnezer, if you set up a barrel of water in the pathway of the fire, in order that you want to extinguish the fire, you're not in the least interested in creating pecham. You just want to save your possessions from going up a flame. Therefore, the whole deal is a malacha shein etzricha legufa. Let's look at it inside. He says, k'shutzarech es malachas akibi l'toeles misuyemes, which means lasos pecham, then he's chayav. But kishu mechab ki enerotze saesh, he has to get rid of this fire. That's called the malach shein etzricha legufa, and he's pot. That's a sugya in perek b'mem adlikin Shabbos daf chav tesam in beis. Therefore, says the Avnezer, in the case of zora, even though he's doing the malach of b'derek rama, but maleches machsheves osra torah, which means that he wants the cheft itself, which is the grain to be free and separate the chaff from the kernel. That itself is a malacha hatzricha legufa. Because why in the Mishkan did they do malachas zorah in order that the grain be free of its chaff? And that's what he's interested in doing. Therefore, malachas machsheves kicks in here because it's not ena tzricha legufa, rather it's tzricha legufa. Avo, but in the case of machaber, that's a case of ena tzricha legufa. He just is interested in putting out the fire. He has no interest in pecham. And therefore, it's lacking in malachas machsheves. So basically, Rabosai, this tshuva of the Avnei Nezer is entering into a whole nother area of Hilchos Shabbos. He's basically circumventing all our issues. We wanted to know, tell me, Torah Eva Lilmon and Yitzhak, Rabosainu, what is it? Is Grama the universal p'tur in all of Melechah Shabbos and Zorah is the exception? Or if I care, just the opposite, that in Moleches Machshavos Osur Torah Yechayv, because in Miskayim Machshavto, even when it's Grama. And we suggest that might be a machlok between the Rosh and Rashi. The Avnei Nezer is completely circumventing the whole parasha, the whole sukkah. Everything that we've been talking about is irrelevant on the radar screen of the Avnei Nezer. What's relevant is, are we dealing with a malacha tzricha legufa or a malacha shena tzricha legufa? And you could just simply focus, or what's the word I want to use here? You could zoom in your camera on two malachas and compare them. One is the Kibui malacha and the other is the Zorah malacha. And when you're introducing Malachas Machsheves, all you're interested in finding out is it Tzricha Legufa or is it ain't it Tzricha Legufa? And the issue of Grama doesn't really come to the fore according to the Avnei Nezer. Don't tell me that you're going to derive conclusions about someone who drops a get in his wife's hand that it's Grama from the Sugya of Kibui. The Sugya of Kibui is on a whole different plane. It's addressing a whole different issue. It's Malacha Shein and Tzricha Legufa because he doesn't need the Pecham. He only needs to get rid of the H. In the case of Zorah, where he's very much interested in separating the grains from the chaff, that's called Malachas Machsheves Osur Torah. That's a Malacha Tzricha Legufa. But basically, the Avnei Nezer is rewriting the text of the Gemara in Bava Kamma. We read the Gemara in Bava Kamma. Wow, there's something bombastic going on here. You know what the Gemara is telling me? Malachas Machsheves Osur Torah. And therefore, Yechayf is Zorah, and we started thinking maybe we should universalize Malachas Machsheves to all Malachas. Rewrite the Gemara. Take a pen, cross out the words Malachas Machsheves Osur Torah, and in place, call it a Malacha Tzricha Legufa. Why is it a Malachas Machsheves? Because he needs the Gufa Malacha. Aye, the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos Kuf Chav that in the case of Kibui, you're potter, because it's Grama. The answer is there is not a Malachas Machsheves, because the Malacha Tzricha Legufa is uninteresting. It's nice, but it really what I call it, subversive. What do you call those who want to just undermine you? We wish success to the Iranian people, but this is really subversive. He's avoiding the whole issue, and I have to tell you this: Rashi, I don't think would give him a. We give him 5 stars for this, it's an approbation. Rashi is saying that Malachas Machsheves is a halacha in Shabbos of Niskayim Machshavta. Has nothing to do with Malachas Machsheves. Lagufa, hin, aher, and.
They're connected.
They are connected, I know, I don't deny that. It's not like the Avnei Nezer is literally crossing out the words, but he's taking it out of the context of Grama. He's saying, forget about Grama. Oh yeah, this kind of Machshavta, he set up the wind and he's utilizing the force of nature. Forget about all that. The question is, does he want to end up with wheat that's free of its chaff? And if the answer is yes, then that's called Malachas Machsheves because it's no longer Malachas Shein Tzricha Legufa. According to the Avnei Nezer, if we could take the Gemara in Bava Kamma Daf Samach and we could graft it onto the sugya of kibui, or the other way around, in Shabbos Daf Kuf Chav, and put these two together, and the Gemara would have asked our question: Maishna Zoresh Achayav Yidei Ruach, Maishna Machavish Upota Yidei Groma, and then we could plug in the Gemara's answer that Hasam in the case of Zorah Melechus Machshavas Asra Torah, meaning that Zorah is Melechus Machshavas. But Hasam in the case of Kibui, Lav Melechus Machshavasi, then everything would be beautiful. And the Avnei Nezer would tell us that the Gemara is comparing and contrasting Melechus Zorah with the case of Kibui, because Zorah is a Melech HaTzricha L'Gufa and Kibui is Melech Shein HaTzricha. This one is Melech HaMachshavas, this one is not a Melech HaMachshavas. That's what comes out of it.
Is he saying that the Patur of Ein Tzricha L'Gufa is because it's not Melech HaMachshavas?
He doesn't mention that, the Avnei Nezer, but I think it's true. I, again, there is a Tosfos that I mentioned many times on Daf Ayin Hey Yom and Aleph. Let me just double check that I'm not.
Because do
you have a Gemara Shabbos here?
I don't have a Gemara Shabbos.
I had a Gemara Shabbos. It's on
the. Right over here.
All right, I'll borrow yours just for a second. Just sort of make sure I'm telling you the right page. On Daf.
Because by Nizik.
Daf Ayin Hey.
By Nizik, you won't call it.
I made a mistake. Sorry. Just give us 1 second, Sam. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I get the right page here. I always get mixed up between Sadi Hey and Ayin Hey. No, it's not here either, so it's got to be, then it's got to be, sorry. Okay, I'm embarrassed to tell you that I don't see it right now. Where is the Tosfos? Oh, here it is. Sadi Dalet Omen Aleph, sorry. So on Daf Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph, you have this massive Tosfos, and Tosfos Mechadish that there's a principle in Hilchos Shabbos is called Dumya de Mishkan. Has nothing to do with Meleches Machshavas. Has nothing to do with what we call the fact that he didn't achieve his goal or something along that line. That's not what Melachah Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is all about. Melachah Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is about the fact that you're not doing the melacha in a mirror image, in the image of Bitzelem HaMishkan. Because the Mishkan is going to tell you what the heft of the melacha is. I call it the victim, the object of the melacha, and you're not interested in that object. Yes, and now it's all yours.
No, too many. It's too complicated.
Too complicated. Okay, so we'll talk about it a little bit later.
Stuck in the very enclosed of Shabbos.
Oh, okay. Now, he points out here that the Mishnah Brura, if somebody, I don't know if Mitch, you have your Mishnah Berurah here?
Yeah.
If you don't mind opening it up, I always forget. I usually have a Mishnah Berurah right here on the table. I don't know if I put it away or whatever. The Mishnah Berurah, if you can open it up, to Shin Lamed Dalet, Sif Chaf Bey. So you have it already? Shin Lamed Dalet, Sif Chaf Bey. Let's see if I can find that. No, I don't see it. This is a misquote, I think. Shin Lamed Dalet, unless he means Sifchav Beis in the Machaber, maybe. What does it say? Shin Lamed Dalet, right? The Gram Kibui Mutter. Just 1 second. Oh, I found it. Okay, good. So it's Shin Lamed Dalet. Ah, now I get it. It's not the Mishnah Brura. Maybe it's the Bir Alocha. Oh, he says Bir Alocha?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I saw Mishnah Brura. That's what threw me for a loop. He says, Lav Dafka Kibui. When the Mechaber Paskins here in Shin Lamed Dalet, that Gram Kibui is Mutter, that's not a special Alocha in Kibui, but rather it applies universally to all malachas. And then he says, "Da'afilu b'chol ha'malachas hadin kein." So I see what he's getting at here, but there's a part of this Mishnah Berurah of this Bir Alocha that's a little bit confusing. Lav dafka Kibui. Oh, I see. I think you have to read the Mishnah Berurah here in the following way. Lav dafka kibui, don't raise the following possibility that Kibui is a malachah shein etzricha legufa, and that's why it's mutter, meaning it's only derabbanan. No, dafilu b'chol ha-malachas ha-din kayem. Brilliant. Amish, brilliant. You know, the Bir Halacha in five words establishes something bombastic, that kibui is not the exception to the rule, but rather it is the rule. And hu ha-din b'shar ha-malachas. That anytime you do a malacha b'grava, you're potter. And then we're going to have to take the Rashi in Seder and the Sugya in Zoreh of Baba Kama Daf Samach and say that those two malachas are the exception to the rule. So the Avnezer says that the reason why you potter in the case of Gram Kibu is because Kibu is a malach shen tzricha legufa. And the Mishnah Bura in his Bir Halacha says that the reason why you're potter in Gram Kibu is because Gram is potter in all the malachas. Zoreh is a little different because of Niskaima Machshavt. Now, did I give you pages 96 and 97? No? Oh, I'm sorry. Here it is. If you can pass this around. Do we have enough copies? I hope I made enough copies. I'm not sure.
You don't need a copy, right?
Yeah. Oh, Baruch Hashem. Worked out. Okay. So he says the following. There's another rush that we have to see in Masechta Beitza, and that's on the Tosis Divrei HaMaschil Veha Mistapek. The Gemara establishes that if you take shemen out of a ner, right, the ner is the receptacle holding on to the oil, then you are chayav mishum mechab. If you add shemen to the ner after it's lit, then you're chayav mishum aleches mavir. So what that means is basically if you either expand the time that the light will be lit, that's Malechas Mavir, or alternatively, if you limit and restrict the light, the time period that the light will be lit, and you cause it to go out earlier, you'll be Chayef from Malechas Mechab. The Tos says, I don't understand. He says, Eino wrote Salomer B'Pneshim Amayer Kibui, that by removing some of the oil, he will speed up the process of kibui, because the candle is not going to last that long. Tinkein lo havi ela gram kibui. Ugram kibui biyontif shari. Okay, the sugya in Masechta Beitza is yontif. And even though we said that gram kibui is osam in Rabbanon, but on yontif, gram kibui is mutter. So how do we understand that you are chayav from aleches mechabe by taking some of the oil out of the ner while it's lit and causing the ner to extinguish earlier? That in the worst case scenario is gram kibui, and there's no isa gram kibui on yontif. Not only that, even on Shabbos he says you're not chayav for gram kibui. Elahinu taima hoil debaosa shoshu mistapik men mechapik tzas. He's saying that when he, in other words, there's what'd he say?
He actually does it.
Yeah, the oil is actually feeding the flame. He grabs onto some of the oil and extracts it, and immediately he causes kibui. So we're not talking about some sort of gram kibui. So Sam, you aren't here, but there
I'm
could
sorry.
Be no, that's okay. But it could be that this tosfos here is very much along your lines. That it depends whether it's immediate or after a certain lapse of time. So Tosfos says that taking out oil from the ner, why is that called Meleches Kibui? And it's not Gram Kibui, because we're talking about Yontif. It is because immediately when he extracts the oil,
it gets weaker. Yeah.
It gets weaker, right? So he's already weakening the light, and that's called Meleches Kibui. So Tosfos is saying that when you take out even a little bit of oil, and the candle is still alive and well, but it's not so well anymore, because now he's already weakening the shalhevis, the flame, and that itself is meleches mechab. Okay. Tosis comes to the conclusion that if you have a wax candle that's
alive and well, it's lit, you're allowed to cut off the bottom of the wax candle. Why? Because in that case, it's only gram kibui. It's only causing the light to go out earlier, but he's not in any way, shape, or form affecting the shalheves now.
How about if you had a timer in Shabbat?
Yeah, this is the old timer in Shabbat business, right?
Right.
And you're going to cause it to go out early.
I'm afraid to ask that question.
On Yom Tov, it's a little less of a problem, right, because right. Tosfos says a gram kibui.
Extend the status quo.
Right, but Sammy wants to know if you can, right, that you want to make it go out earlier. So it sounds like Tosis is saying that there's a problem with Gram Kibu, but keep in mind.
It's their problem to begin with. It's Ansich Lagufa to begin with.
Well, okay, that's a different issue. Tosis now is not talking about Malach Ansich Lagufa, he's talking about Gram Kibu, but it's interesting, he says that in the case of the Gemara, there in Beitza, the Gram Kibu has an immediate effect on the shalheves.
But that's not true for a timer.
And that's not true for a timer. So even though, you know, my knee-jerk response is that, you know, you're raising a very serious issue of gram kibui because of this tosis, but when you look at it, as, you know, you give it a second look, on the contrary, tosis would give me room for a kula, because tosis says that this is not gram kibui unless you're weakening the shalheves. In other words, it could be that your case is more similar to the wax candle, which he allows you to cut down the wax candle, even though that means that, that instead of lasting for an hour, it's going to last a half hour. Because he's not at that moment causing a weakening of the shalheves. Okay, that's Tosfos, but we're interested in the Rosh. The Rosh disagrees with Tosfos. And here he quotes the language of the Rosh. So if you're following me on page 96... it's the next to the last paragraph on the right column. Hilchach nirali taima de mistapik min aner mishum shememayer kibuyov kibuyo, I guess it is. The afra bonin de Rab Yossi, remember we spoke about the rabbonin who say that gram kibu is mutter in the case of the barrels of water. Modu that high grama chayav. Why? What's the difference between setting up barrels of water so that the fire, when it reaches this barrel in its path, is going to break the barrels, and then the water is going to overflow and put out the fire? And why is that any different than someone who takes out some of the oil from the nair? In both cases, it's only gram kibui. And the rabbanan of the opinion, in the case of the barrels, that gram kibui is mutter. Says the Rosh, Ad kan lo pligi hasam. Why did Rabbanan say that gram kibui in the case of the barrels is mutter? Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Ela mishum di eno nogea bidora dolik. He doesn't have any direct contact with the flame. Right? He's only handling the chavios. Ela osa dover chutzalo. He's doing something outside, external to the nair, and that's goring the kibul. Aval hacha, but here in the case in the Gemara in Beitza, where he's taking out some of the oil, hashemen vapsila shneim garmim es hadleika. Right, the dleika is a composite of two active forces. It's the shemen, the oil, that's feeding the psila. Vamamayit beechad mem. If he takes away part of the psila, or if he takes away part of the oil, memayer es hakibui, he is speeding up, hastening the kibui. Ad kan divrei harosh. So again, let's just, you know, without explaining the rush, let's just reiterate what he says. The rush says, are you tampering with the nair itself? Now you and I might have said, well, what's the nair? Maybe the nair is only the shalheves. But the Rosh assumes that a nair is made up of three ingredients, all of which form one unit. There's the shalheves, there's the psila that holds the shalheves, and there's the shemen that's feeding the psila. Okay, he doesn't mention the receptacle. The receptacle itself is not part of the active force in the fire. In the case in Masechta Shabbos Daf Kuf Chaf, there, he doesn't touch any part of the nair. Not the wicks and not the oils and nothing.
He only touches the barrels which he places there in a way that's going to cause kibbutz. That's called gram kibbutz. The Chachamim hold against Rav Yosef, gram kibbutz is mut. Not so in the case of Beitza. In the case of Masechta Beitza, we're dealing with direct contact with one of the elements of the flame, of the fire. I'm looking for a word here. I don't want to use the word ner, because if I use the word ner, that indicates even the receptacle. We're not talking about the receptacle, we're talking about the Shem and the Psila and the Shalhevis. So I don't know what you call that. I don't know if there's a word in any language for that. There, it's part of the flame. The oil that's feeding the flame is part of the flame. It's one entity. And the Rush says that by removing some of the oil, you are doing kibui mash. That's not called ground kibui, but that's kibui. So he says the following. That when we look at the Shemen that is causing the wick to burn, we don't see the flame separately as a new entity, but rather the flame is a harkava. Harkava means it's a hybrid, it's a composite. Meshemen upsila. See, you hear what he's saying here. You don't look at the flame itself. You're looking at the psila that holds on to the flame, you're looking at the shemen that's feeding the flame, and all these three are indivisible. Yama shemen shebekli nechshav chelik me'aesh. The pella of the chiddush, because I would have said that the shemen is feeding the fire, but it's not part of the fire. Lachin kasher lokchim mimenu kapit shemen. You take a spoon and you dip it into the shemen. You want to take it out. Is hechsarnu me'aesh. We took away from the fire itself. And again, you'll ask me, but wait a minute, it's still lit. He says, no, we're going on to page 97, and he says, in Echus, he says, in terms of the quality of the flame, something has changed. I'm sorry, something, yeah, you're right, I added my own here a little bit. I was hoping that's what he would say, but he's insisting that nothing changed, right? However, oh, so wait a minute. So this is supposed to explain why he's chayiv. Just one second. All right. So far, he hasn't really explained why the Rosh says he's chayiv. You know, it's the machlok shi, the Rosh, it's also going to be the case of the Ner Shava, right? If you cut the bottom off of a candle, a wax candle, Tosa says that that's perfectly okay, and the Rosh is going to say that you're chayiv for that. Why? Because the candle is made up of these three elements. It's the wax in this case instead of shemen, right? And it's the psila and the shalhevis, and it's any all those three are part of one entity, which is the fire. So the fire extends, the shalhevis extends to include also the psila and the, again, shemen in one case, or shava in the other case. And since it's all one entity of esh, then if you take away from that esh, that's called kibbutz. Even though, again, if you isolate the shalheves, so there's no qualitative difference in the shalheves. It's not the way Tosus learns that it's about, you know, you're really something coming so close to the wick that you're doing something now, right? You're being mamayer the kibui now. Ulam, however, in the case in the barrels, which is gram kibui, there be'emes the pu'ula is a dayan ein kol kibui before. If you take a look at the action that he's doing, you isolate the action of placing the barrels there, that's not kibui. He's not doing any sort of action that could be called kibui. He's guaranteeing that the fire will go out, but that's not a gram kibui. Well, I shouldn't say that. That's not a kibui, I should say. But in the case of the mistapik bin hashemen, where we view and define the shemen together with the psila and the shalhevis as one esh, then he is doing a kibui the moment he takes part of the shemen, even though you and I, we're not seeing it. And therefore, he says, according to the Rosh, you would not be allowed to cut the bottom of a wax candle while it's lit, because in that case, you have a kibui. Why do you have a kibui? I mean, nothing changed. Right now, at least, the flame is still absolutely perfect and beautiful. But the answer is that the Eish is made up not only of the fire and the flame, but it also encompasses the candle, the wax of the candle, the wick of the candle, and everything together.
I think they call it Ne'er. That's the creation.
Right. The only reason, Sam, I'm avoiding the word Ne'er is because I'm influenced by the sugya that we're learning in the morning, and that sugya uses the word Ne'er specifically to refer to the receptacle that's holding the Shemen Psila Het Shalhevis. And the question is whether that Ne'er, meaning that receptacle, is Muktzah or not.
But that's with the Chigar HaYotzer that it should drip, still considered one unit, right?
Still considered one unit. So let's just finish up with the next little small paragraph. He says that according to the Rush, when you cut, according to the Rush, in the case of Zorah, he says you want to analyze Zorah from the perspective of Grama, we could say that the action of a person to throw up the wheat into the air is considered a maisa beguf hadavar. Okay, we have to underline those words here. It's a maisa beguf hadavar, velo chutzalo. Right, the whole breakthrough of the Rush was that the shemen is part of the H, part of the shalevis. It's not something external like the case of the barrels vis-a-vis the H. Here also, in the case of Zorah, the act of the human being to throw up the wheat up into the air is not external. Okay, then, so Belineta will try to pick this up. Again, if there's any way you can hold on to these pages, so you'll save me the hassle of having to photograph them.
External, different times, same concept or different concepts?
Right now it's a different concept, because the whole thrust of the Rush is to define the define the H as Shemin is part of the H. And that's why I tell you that according to the Rush, even if you would put the barrel there immediately next to, proximate or continuous to the fire, it would still be part, because he's doing an action on something that's external to the H. All right, let's see if we can.